Gano, Sego, Segoli, Ani, and welcome to Compelling Conversations. I'm your host, David Moses. You're listening to CKRZ 100.3 FM, the voice of the Grand. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show today Ms. Elaine Bombery. Elaine is on the show because she just recently won the Builder Award, the Brian Chater Builder Award from the Music Managers Forum of Canada. That was on March 6th. Elaine was in the studio with me, and we're going to hear that conversation momentarily. But I wanted to tell you a little bit more about Elaine. She's one of the people that were the trailblazers here at CKRZ, starting out with Gary Farmer when she originally started out on CKRZ back in the 90s, where she started her radio show, Aboriginal Voices, and it went on to become quite a notarized a program that she introduced people to Indigenous artists, and she became quite well known for that. In fact, she became one of the people that went on to, along with Buffy St. Marie and Shingoose, to approach the Junos and have them instill a new Juno Award for Aboriginal artists. We're going to hear all about that, but why don't we get right to our conversation with Elaine Bombery right here on CKRZ 100.3 FM. On Compelling Conversations. It is such a great pleasure for me to welcome back to the show, welcome back to CKRZ, someone who is very familiar with the station itself and the history of this station, because she was actually one of the, I guess the trailblazers, you might say, of the station. You may remember her if we were just talking to a young fellow out in the foyer of the station, and I was introducing Elaine Bombery, who is here with me in the studio, and said, "Hey, do you know Elaine Bombery? You must know of Elaine Bombery." And we're saying he's actually not even born when Elaine had her show going on the air.
He said he was negative.
Yeah, that's right, negative. So it's such a great honor to have Elaine Bombery here. Back in the station, because she is here. She just won the Brian Charter Builder Award, and so it's such a pleasure to have her here for that. March 6th, I believe it was, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
So congratulations to you.
Thank you. Sego Ani, everybody. I'm back.
And I think of all the things that you've done over the years, and you got this Builder Award.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did they give you more details in terms of what that builder meant to them in terms of the award itself?
Yeah, when I was checking out the website and reading the history of Brian Chater, who I actually got to meet way back in the day, in the early days when I was starting in the working with the Junos, he helped set up so many different resources and organizations, you know, for the Canadian music industry at large. Mm. And so when they invited me and told me I was getting this award, and it was because of the work I had done in the early days of, you know, setting up the Indigenous Juno back in 92, 93 with Buffy St. Marie and the late Curtis Shingoose Johnny. Yep. And, you know, and here I was on the founding board here at CKRZ and started Res Blue. So everything was bubbling all at the same time, you know. So, and then just throughout my whole career, that's all I've been doing, you know, just behind the scenes and very happy there. And just, you know, opening doors and saying, "Okay, you kids, get in there, you know." Trailblazer, bushwhacker, whatever you want to call it, you know.
Well, you know, and so with that, the award, this Builder Award that you got, was from the Music Managers Forum of Canada, which is this nonprofit organization. And that's what it aims to do, is to build and make sure that the managers, I guess, are doing the best job they can, right, for the industry.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And again, because, you know, as a manager and agent, you're behind the scenes and you don't get acknowledged, you know, for that work.
It's true.
And so this organization has been around now for 15 years. So they're, you know, created an alliance amongst the music managers so people can talk and, you know, talk about shared experiences. And, you know, with CRTC and everything, laws, everything changed so fast within the music industry.
Yeah.
So an organization like this helps keep the music managers and agents, you know, on top of everything, you know, with changing legislations as well and stuff like that as it pertains to our recording artists.
Yeah. And of course, it's not just about the recording side, right? It's about performance and the events that, that happen, I guess, not only across Turtle Island, but internationally. You have artists that are traveling, too.
Yeah, exactly. Touring and all of that. And again, the technology has really changed, you know, the soundscape, the landscape of the music industry, you know, with all this... everything that went digital, you know, and then how do you get royalties from digital music and all of that, you know, it's all new, you know, everyone's still, you know, getting used to all of that. So it's been a learning curve for everyone, you know, in the involved in the music industry.
Now, having said that, Elaine, with the world of the digital world that we find ourselves in and musicians find themselves in, we do see some change there. I think SOCAN and CRTC are trying to move forward to try and get more pay for artists, because really it's the middleman, right? It's the Spotify's and all those people that have been raking in the millions on this, and so little has gone towards the artist.
Yeah, exactly. Like Spotify, I mean, my gosh, like how many plays do you need before you make a dollar?
Yeah, no kidding. Crazy.
Like I seen a figure there, Pharrell Williams had, I forget, like an astronomical amount of
crazy.
Plays, and he got paid a little wee bit of money.
Like, and you go, how is that even fair?
Yeah, I know, you know. I know. Again,
there it is.
Yep, there it is. Yeah, yeah. And I know I've for years and years and years, like again, we've had so many indigenous music circles and that throughout the years at different levels of government and stuff, and always challenged the CRTC, you know, that, you know, sure, we have CanCon, you know, Canadian content that each radio station has to play.
Yep.
And we pushed way back in the day. I remember hearing Seaweed, you know, Errol Ranville back in the day saying, you know, we need an indigenous, you know, CanCon that each radio station in Canada should play a certain percentage as well of Indigenous music. Mm-hmm. So now that's being entertained, but it's taken like over 25, 30 years of this discussion that it's finally on the table now. So they are talking about that, which I think would be astronomical and really give a much needed boost to the Indigenous music industry and the Indigenous music artists to, you know, maybe earn an extra few bucks, you know, if their music was played nationwide on all radio stations.
Kidding. Yeah. And why shouldn't artists be able to make a decent living doing what they do?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
They shouldn't have to struggle. The creative process is such a difficult one to begin with, you know?
Exactly. And creating a consciousness too, you know, because a lot of the times our artists, they don't always have to sing about what's going on with our people or anything like that, but they are, you know, my husband, Murray Porter, you know, has written songs about murdered and missing women on both this, his last two albums, you know, Highway 16, you know, just a highway in Northern BC where so many of our women have gone missing. Yeah. It's just unreal. And we've traveled that highway several times, and it's just heartbreaking because you'll go a few miles and then you'll see a big banner, you know, this lady's missing and this one's missing. And then you'll go another mile and you'll see another banner with another face. And, you know, it's just, it's really, really sad. There's songs about the environment, you know. I even wrote words to a song called The Water, you know, and I showed it to Marie, made it to a song, you know, like, I didn't know I could do that. I mean, if I can write words, you can too.
There you go.
Don't be shy, people.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. And you know, that Highway 16, talking about that, I remember there's been books written about that as, well, some authors, and I did some interviews with people on that. And, you know, when I think of that, and we focus on the victims, we focus on the missing, which we should, but I what really is in the back of my head is there's people out there doing this. The perpetrators are out there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the scary part.
It is, right? And where we should be focusing on these people to try and get them.
Exactly, exactly. I don't know if you've seen the show on television. It's called Alaska Daily with Hilary Swank and Indigenous actress Grace Dove. It's on right now. This, I think it's their third season, I believe, second or third season. And that's the focus of that series, is about the murdered and missing women that happen up in Alaska. Because it's not just Highway 16. It's right across the board, coast to coast to coast to coast, down in the States as well. And down there as well. It's not only missing Indigenous women. It's brown women, black women, you know, that go missing all the time. And it's it's really, it's an epidemic, you know. And it needs to be treated as such by our governments. And it's just a sad state that's still not getting any better, because I live, me and Murray live in North Vancouver on the Capilano Res. And, you know, we hear it like at least every other week or once a week, there's someone missing in the downtown east side in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's where, that's a really, that's the area where there's a lot of ODs, and you know, it's a really sad part of town. If you ever get to Vancouver, you got to see it to believe it.
Oh, you do.
You know, there's tents, they're living in tents on the sidewalks.
Yep.
You know, it's just horrible to see. It's,
you know what, when I was there, I hadn't been down to the east side of Vancouver for some time, and as you know, my son is out there at UBC, and when I was out there setting him up, I drove down there. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how much it had changed, and just the lines of people.
Yeah.
They're just lining the side of the streets and living there.
Yeah.
Set up camp.
And it's really unbelievable. And I just went by there just last week. I went to go see an Indigiqueer musical, which was just fantastic. But anyway, coming back, being driven back home, my driver, we went along Hastings. And there was more than ever before. Like, and I hadn't been down there since maybe the summer. Right. There was even more people now.
Yeah.
And it just... This is heartbreaking.
It
really is. Because a lot of it, most, like 80% of those people are our people, are our Indigenous people down there.
Yeah. I know. It's so sad. It's so sad, Elaine.
Yeah.
Let's try and move on to, I'm glad we acknowledged that, though. I'm glad we spoke about that for people to understand.
Yeah,
that.
But, to understand. Yeah, exactly.
You know, but coming back to you and your this award that you received, and and going back over your time that you got involved with music, I was thinking about this, and we may have touched on this before, but I'm not sure. What originally got you interested in music and wanting to do a radio show on music and featured Indigenous artists? Mm-hmm. And also, what got you stepping into the world of management and getting behind the scenes and working with, in that world?
That's a loaded question. In music, like I grew up with music in our house. Like my parents, Peter and the late Rita Bomberry, always had music, and they were members of these record clubs, you know, Columbia House or whatever, and you'd order all these albums. So there's always all kinds of music in the house, you know, Jose Feliciano, Chet Atkins, Patsy Cline, Hank Sr., you know, so it was a really cool, Ray Charles, so it was always cool to listen to this different kind of music, B.B. King, and so it was always in the, you know, in the brain. And then in Toronto, where we all grew up, there used to be the Forum at Ontario Place, which was a revolving stage, and there would be different acts there, and you could go for free, and so my parents would take us down there, and that's where I first got to see B.B. King sing The Thrill Is Gone. Wow. And I was about 12 years old, and I was fixated. I was like, are you kidding me? What is this? You know? And then the next day I went and bought the little 45. It's not a gun. It's a little short for those who might not know what a 45 is. One song.
Right. Two songs. One on each side. Yeah, one on each side.
Exactly.
And it's a 45, which is a small record.
Yeah, small record. There we go. Yeah. So I went and got that, and just always listening to music, and getting to see Redbone for the first time on the Midnight Special sing Come and Get Your Love. And they had a powwow dancer in the beginning. And I was about 12, 13 and just watching that. And I just went, again, the light bulb moment. I said, Indians can play rock and roll, you know? So it was that kind of moment for me. And I thought it was so cool. Yeah. And then my parents, they would take us to, they took us to the Mariposa Folk Festival that one summer. Mm. That's when it was on, still on Toronto Island. Mm-hmm. And there was an all Native showcase. There was Alanisa Bonswin, you know, our famous filmmaker. She's also a folk singer.
She's a folk singer, that's how she started.
She's a folk singer. She was there. Goose was there, Shingoose, Tom Jackson, Paul Ritchie, Willie Dunn,
Wow.
Yeah, and Duke Redbird reciting his poetry.
Wow, what a show.
Yeah, it was. There was about 7-8 of them. And then so they played there, and we all went and watched. And then a few weekends later, they were up at Summer Folk Festival in Own Sound, and my dad packed us all up. My mom and dad packed us all up in our little dart swinger, and off we went. We went to Own Sound, and then back to Toronto. Then a few weeks later, they were up. The same group was up at Northern Lights Festival in Sudbury. We were going to Whitefish Lake Reserve anyway, which is just outside of Sudbury. We got good close family friends there. And so we went and saw them again. And again, I remember seeing like Tom Jackson, and Shingo's had great big bushy hair. And, you know, and I'm sitting there watching them as a teenager, young teenager. And fast forward, you know, 20 years later, I'm working with all these guys. Like I wouldn't even have imagined. You know, I would not have imagined, you know, having had a chance to work with them all and then all become friends and stuff. Yeah. So I was lucky to get in on that first wave, you know. And so
speaking of that first wave, getting involved with the radio station, how did you get involved with the station?
It was actually Gary Farmer.
Okay.
Yeah. When we were at the barracks there in the basement with the mice running
the
all
mice
over.
And snakes.
Yeah, the snakes. Thank God I never saw a snake, but I saw the mice. Yeah, it was Gary, because I had already started my talent agency, All Nations Talent Group, with my late mom.
Right.
And so I was getting familiar with the artists, you know, who was recording and everything. And that was back in the day of cassettes. And remember, people, should we explain cassettes? No, to the younger listeners.
They're coming back, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Cassettes and LPs.
Really?
Yeah, all that.
I like the LPs.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was Gary. He says, you know, we're starting this radio station. You know, why don't you, you know, come on down, do a show. And I had already finished working at Native Earth Performing Arts for 3 years in Toronto with Thompson Highway. Mm. And we did the Red Sisters and Dry Lips Auto Move to Kapuskasing and stuff. So I was familiar with the actors and the musicians I was starting to become familiar with. And then he says, why don't you start a show? He goes, I'll guide you through it. And I said, a show? I don't know how to do radio. I don't know what to do. He goes, 15 minutes. Come on, Elaine, 15 minutes. I said, okay. So there's me and Gary doing our little thing. Oh, and he says, say go to everybody, by the way. I just spoke to him before I got here. He's in Vancouver. But anyway, he said, let's, you know, why don't you try and do this little 15-minute show? And I went, boom, and boom, it was gone, right? 15 minutes. And then, so he was around for about the first month, right? So once a week, 15 minutes, 15 minutes. And then off, he got a movie, off he goes, right? And then I'm there by myself in front of the microphone. So then I had to run with it then. And then people would say, how about half an hour, Elaine? How about half an hour? I said, okay, I think I can do half. So slowly they increased my show. Can you do an hour now? I said, yeah, sure. And then in the end, I was doing 2 hours just before the bingo.
Yeah. And what was the premise of your show?
It was called Aboriginal Airwaves. First, it was called Native Music and the Arts, very boring. And then I switched it to Aboriginal Airwaves. And I focused primarily on contemporary Indigenous music, because after me was a traditional music show. So I didn't, you know, I'll stick with what I know. Mm-hmm. And it was a perfect, you know, combination. Yeah. And so I was just so thrilled, you know, when I got the call from Robbie Robertson's production team that he wanted to come home. Mm. And I got the call, so I was able to coordinate his home visit. You know, we went and had lunch at the Woodland Cultural Center with the elected chief at the time and some of our traditional chiefs as well. And the late Chief Arnie General was there with his purple hot rod and and took Robbie for a spin in the parking lot at the Woodland Cultural Center. They were doing donuts and Robbie's hanging out in there. It's a visual I'll never forget. And he never forgot about it either. So, you know, to have and then bring him here to CKRZ during that visit, you know, I'll never forget that. And the lineup of cars out in the parking lot, people just wanting to get a little boo and people coming in. The station was packed because people wanted to have a boo at, you know, take a look at Robbie. And, so it's wonderful to know he's always, you know, coming home now more on a regular basis. And,
And, you know, speaking of Robbie, it's so amazing to think of the influence that man has had with the band and just through what he accomplished in his life.
Oh, yeah.
And like right across the music industry.
Yeah, exactly. And like creating that genre of Americana. They call it Americana music, like folk music and combination of different blends of, you know, but it's great storyteller. You know, that's
and
that's,
a great voice for
us. Oh, yeah. I used to like it when he would call from wherever he was when we were setting up his visit and everything. And my mom would pick up the phone and she'd go, "Oh, hi, Robbie. How are you?" "Yeah, I'm good." I said, "Give me the phone, Mom." Just, I like his voice. And she'd stretch it out, right? She was so cute.
Yeah, that's great. What a great story. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, well, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that and telling us how you got into the station and stuff. Now, the other thing, you're involved with other things as well. I mean, you've got stuff going on still. I mean, you're still managing, you know, Murray.
Yep.
Right? Tell us about the Toronto Blues Society and what's going on with that.
Okay. It was actually when we started Res Blues, it was back in, we're going way back to like 92, 93. Everything, like I said, was happening around the same time. Mm-hmm. Like the Juno category started. We had started a music office, Denise Bolduc and I in Toronto, Aboriginal Music Project.
Right.
And then Res Blues, myself and Jannie Lazon was, she was on the board at the time of the Toronto Blues Society. And she was complaining to them that, you know, they only showcased, you know, white males playing the blues, and there was no room for women's voices or people of color's voices. This is back in 92. And so I was talking with her and I said, "Well, you know, Jannie, there's a lot of blues musicians on my reserve in Six Nations." And she wasn't aware of that. And we said, "Well, why don't we try and ask them, the board of directors, if we could do an all-native blues show?" And so we got on the agenda. And we did the pitch, and I had both my sisters, Nancy and Tracy Bomberry, as my backup. They're bigger than me, so they're backup. They had to say yes. No. And so we did a presentation to the board and told them we needed this show. And so they thought it was a good idea. So then it became a discussion of what club do we go to? And then TBS was saying, "Well, let's go for a small club, like 150 people. For starters, right? And I just laughed, right? I said, 150 people. I said, "That's my friends and family alone," you know? And Tracy and Nancy are nodding their heads. "Yeah, you know, that's all of us," right? And then I wanted a club for like 500-600 people. And they said, "No, that's too much for a first time show." And so we agreed to 350 capacity. So at the time, the Edgewater.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Club on Ronsonsvilles and Queen was operating, and so that was held about 350, and we were sold out at 8:30 that night. You know, so we had to turn away a lot of people. A lot of people were mad at me, and I said, "Well, I tried to tell them, you know, that we needed a bigger club." And I said, but that night, Derek Andrews, the longstanding president of the TBS, said to me at 10:30 that night, he goes, "Elaine, you want to do another Res Blues?" I said, "Yes." And he says, in 10 months, so March of that, 10 months later, we did another one, but we went to a club on the Danforth, and that held like 1,200 people. So we were able to get in there and do a show. And we sold out there, too. Third year, nobody wanted to do it. You know, like we had CKRZ as a sponsor and the two community radios, the campus radio, CKLN and CIUT in Toronto and TBS. But the third year, everyone said, "No, it's okay." Kind of ran its course. That's what they thought. But I didn't believe that. But with my company at the time, All Nations Talent Group, my mom and I spoke to her. I says, "Let's still do this show." And so we just ran with it. You know, it became once a year. And then people were saying, "We need more." So it ended up like we do it about 3-4 times a year at the Silver Dollar, which sadly no longer exists. I almost cried going by there in a cab the other day, seeing nothing. You know, it's gone, the sign, you know. What a drag. But anyway, so then, you know, I just, Res Blues became something that, you know, I just would shape and mold as I went along. And I did a radio documentary on the subject, and I got to interview like Buffy St. Marie talking about the Indigenous influence on the formation of the early blues, a whole bunch of artists, Billy Joe Green and even an African ethnomusicologist talking about it and believing, yes, there is an indigenous influence on the blues, right? Yeah, yeah. So we got to talk about all of that. And then eventually it became a TV series. I was executive producer, Res Blues, for the Aboriginal People's Television Network. We did 2 seasons, 13 one-hour shows. And of course, I had to include the comedians because that's a, you know, that works as a formula. Music and comedy is just fabulous. But in the first season, I had a lot of our own people as hosts who I was never a host before. Diane Key was never a host before. Josh Miller was never a TV host before. And I roped them in, you know, so, come on, you guys, we all know the blues, right? We knew the music. So I said, what better fit than for you guys to be a host? And so they, everyone rose to the occasion and that. So, but for the second season, I thought, okay, how do I make this a bit different? And that's when I placed our comedians as the hosts. Yeah. So it was just, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I really, really wanted a third season. We tried and tried, but APTN shut us down and just said that ship has sailed. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, hey, you got 2 good seasons. And congratulations to you again on that too. you know, it makes me wonder now, Elaine, about the future. You know, I mean, you've still got a lot to give.
Yes.
So what do you see looking?
I'm still hanging on to the Res Blues concept, right? And for years after the TV show, whenever Murray and I would travel, like if we went to Ottawa, I would call up the Rainbow Room, which is the blues club in Ottawa. And they knew me. They knew us. And I'd say, I'd like to do a Res Blues show. And like, we'll be in Ottawa in a month. Can we pull one off? And they'd say, sure. You know, and so we'd fold, you know, totally fill the club up and everything. Mm-hmm. So even if we went to London, Ontario, you know, with Robbie Anton would help us set up the Res Blues, you know, we would do one there. Yeah. So we just like, it's very casual. And then in living in Vancouver, of course, we had a home there at the Yale, which unfortunately isn't a blues bar anymore. But when it was, we were very much a part of that. And when they closed it for renovations, they had 3 shows at the very last day of the Yale was closing and Res Blues was one of them. So yeah, it's still there. It's, you know, it's in my mind. It's in my heart. And Murray and I, we really, really, really want to do a Res Blues podcast.
Oh, nice.
So I've been speaking with a number of really key people who are really keen on helping us out. And I was just on a podcast yesterday in Toronto, the Mark Merlinian, the Church of Mark. Mark Najuan is his name. And he has the setup in his house, his apartment. And I thought, oh my God, this is perfect. I would love to be able to do this, you know, and people do podcasts at home and stuff. And so ideally, you know, Murray and I have talked about it and we've spoken with a lot of artists who are totally game and the comedians again, you know, but just bring it up to date and let's just talk about what's going on now because there's even more Indigenous blues than ever.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I forgot to tell you. I think I mentioned I'm on the board of directors for the Toronto Blues Society.
Yes, you did.
For the very first time at the Maple Blues Awards, which is Canada's National Blues Awards. Next year in January will be the very first Indigenous Blues Artist or Group of the Year award as a Maple Blues Award.
Nice.
You heard it here first.
Oh, that's great.
I know.
Wow. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So making room again, you know, just making room there for our artists. And because look, oh my God, the amount of blues that's come out of here in 6 Nay and seeing the whole tour that's happening with Josh and Treaty and of that. It's just brilliant. Yep. It's just wonderful. And different people are helping with that. Like Tim Johnson's doing his rolled up his sleeves to get that out there. That's just wonderful. Yep. Wonderful work.
It is. It's great. Especially on the heels of the work that Tim has done, you know, with Rumble and all that stuff that they got.
Oh, yeah.
As well. So lots of great stuff happening for sure. So much. Great stuff for people to look forward to. You know, again, it just goes to show you in terms of what you were just talking about, Elaine, and in terms of, you know, the possibility of you doing a podcast, you know, you and Murray doing a podcast makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
I wonder, why you guys haven't maybe done that in the past already.
You know? I don't know. We had the pandemic.
I can see you guys doing that from your condo, you know, in Vancouver for sure.
Exactly. You know, it'd be wonderful. Yeah. You know, I would just love to be able to do that. You know, we just got to figure that out. And, you know,
it's not that hard. You know, that's the other thing that has changed with the digital world.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. It's also accessible. Mm-hmm. And it's also, yeah, everybody can do it.
Exactly.
And there's so much of that. I hear of so many other podcasts and shows that are being done on other stations, right, as well, that have key musicians that have rolled themselves into the position of DJs and doing that kind of stuff in the area that they are an expert on doing.
Exactly. And it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You know, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see.
That's great. Well, we look forward to that, Elaine, for sure.
It's on the burner there.
That's so exciting. That's so exciting. Congratulations on that as well. I'm glad we got to talk about, you know, your early days here at the station as well. It's so important for that. Now, is there anything else in terms of the Res Blues or the Toronto Blues Society that is coming up, or things that we haven't mentioned that you want to touch on?
Absolutely. Myself and Denise Bolduc, she's the one who actually inducted me for my award. I could select who I wanted the music managers to induct me. So I chose Denise because we've been cohorts and behind the scenes and equals for many decades. And she just did an amazing speech. I'm asking her for a copy of it just so I have it and show Murray. But anyway, we're both on a team. We're on an advisory board for the Smithsonian Folkways recording through the Smithsonian Institute out of Washington, D.C. And Smithsonian Folkways has a label, a record label in the States, and so many amazing compilations have been produced through there. So for the very first time, they're doing a Canada series.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we figure it'll be about a year and a half before that. So we're on the advisory board to select the music and to get the word out there. So Denise and I are the only ones without the doctor acronym in front of our names. Everyone is their ethnomusicologists, essentially.
Right.
We're the ones with our feet on the ground, supposedly, and we'll help get the word out shortly. We're defining everything right now, working, you know, in the background stuff of what would be eligible for such a compilation.
Right.
But I know what they... I don't know if you've seen any of their previous recordings, but what they do with Folkways, just brilliant, beautiful packaging and the booklets and everything.
Sure.
Just really beautiful product.
Yes.
So that the Canada series will be coming down the pipe, and you can bet we'll be having some Indigenous blues on there.
Yeah.
And also, I just signed on to work with the Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Awards.
Right.
That will be happening on June the 6th in Ottawa at the National Arts Centre.
Nice.
And again, there's a Indigenous Blues category in there as well. And a couple of years ago, this will be our second one. We were supposed to happen last year, but the pandemic was so bad, we couldn't get into it. There's no way they were going to let us in the NAC.
Mm-hmm.
And then my co-creative Vince Fontaine suddenly passed away. So that really knocked the wind out of our sails, and we're all blown away. And so we just said, we're not going to happen this year. It's just too many variables. It's not going to feel right. Not going to feel good. So we're back up and running for this year. And the submission dates are open, and I'll get all that info to you as well to share with your listeners. And a number of categories within the Summer Solstice Indigenous Music Award. So that's
amazing.
Coming down the pipe. So
amazing stuff. Wow. That's also exciting.
Keeping a little bit busy.
Yeah, I'd say so. it's great to have you back in the community
and be here.
The air with us here at the station, and to be able to share, about your accomplishments and about this the Builder Award that you've received. Congratulations once again.
Now,
and it's a very Elaine brought it here, and she pulled it out of the box to show me a very beautiful award that you were given. So congratulations once again.
Thank you, Dave.
Are you going to put it up on the shelf next to, I understand that Buffy gave you a Juno Award that she received.
Yes, she did in 2018. Mm. And we have a little glass little case at home. And so Murray's Juno is in there. And And then I put Buffy's on the next shelf because it's only so big. Right? Mm-hmm. And so I went to a conference in Victoria, and I had actually put Buffy's Juno on top and moved Murray's down.
I think you posted about that.
Yeah, I did. And then when I came back from the conference, he had switched them back. I didn't know until a few weeks later. Some people came over, they wanted to see the Junos, and then we're showing them, and I oh, he did that sneaky guy. But it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, Elaine, again, such a pleasure to have you come in to the station to grace us here and to be able to share and get your voice out there to the community and let them hear what's going on.
It feels good to be back home, I tell you.
Well, Nyawagoa, for coming in and doing this with us. And it really is a pleasure for me to have you on the show and do this with us as well. So
thank you, David.
Okay. That is Compelling Conversations right here on CKRZ 100.3 FM. I'm your host, David Moses. My guest, Elaine Bombury. And she is here on the heels of just having received this award for the Builders Award from the Music Managers Forum of Canada. And such a pleasure to have her here in the station and in the studio to talk to you, our listeners, right here.
On the voice of the grand.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to say that.
So until next time, please be kind to each other, and we will talk to you very soon. Nyawa for listening. And until next time, I say Ona and Bamapi.
Bamapi.